This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Martin J. Walsh was sworn in today as Boston's 48th mayor, the city's first new chief executive in 20 years. Walsh promised to listen and to be a mayor to everyone in Boston, to every neighborhood, race, and religion.
This is a city that started the revolution that gave us a nation. We fought tyranny. We stood up to slavery. We opened the doors to immigrants. And when our gay and lesbian neighbors reminded us of the rights they were now being denied, we backed up their fight and helped the Commonwealth become the first to protect those rights in law.
Walsh took the oath of office at Boston College, his alma mater, in front of his mother, his girlfriend, city councilors, Governor Deval Patrick, senators, members of Congress, and thousands of other onlookers. He pledged to strengthen the city's economy, improve its public schools, and increase government trust and transparency.
And he said his first order of business was to convene a meeting today to tackle urban violence, which he said still scars the city.
No parent should worry that a bullet will stop a daughter or son from coming home. No woman should be scared on our streets. No senior should be afraid in their home. And no child should be forced to live with trauma and the indelible scars of violence.
The WBUR's Fred Tice attended the inauguration this morning, and he joins us now. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Anthony.
So give us a sense of what this inauguration felt like. What was the mood there?
Well, it was definitely an ebullient mood, Anthony. A lot of supporters, thousands of supporters, really, of Marty Walsh who had come to the Conti Forum. They had wanted to go there to get a big enough place to fit all the people they wanted to reward with tickets to the inauguration. There was a mix of tradition and a nod to Marty Walsh's Irish roots, as well as the voices of New Boston. You had the Boston Fire Gaelic Pipe and Drum Band, but you also had students from the Renaissance Charter Public School singing. You had Yo-Yo Ma playing Danny Boy.
Right. A real mix of the old and the new there. Well, let's jump right in and talk about his agenda. What struck you about what he laid out today, about his vision for this city?
I thought it was an ambitious agenda. He wants to improve the schools. He wants to improve the economy, thereby creating jobs for residents of Boston. He wants to reduce gun violence, and he wants to increase transparency in government.
And Fred, it seemed like he laid it out. He was remarkably concise the way he laid this out. He managed to lay out those goals in about 18 seconds. Let's listen.
My priorities are clear. Strengthening our economy and creating jobs. Improving public safety and stopping senseless gun violence. Ensuring our schools help every child to succeed. And increasing trust and transparency in city governments.
But then, Fred, he got a lot more specific about those goals, right?
Yeah, that's right. For example, he wants more early childhood education. He wants to get state funding for building new schools. He talked about the Strand Theater, where he grew up near the Strand Theater in Upham's Corner, and he talked about making that a center for cultural activity in the city.
Now, talk a little bit about what he said about urban violence. During the campaign, he talked about making this a meeting on urban violence, the first order of business in his new administration. What did he have to say about that, and what's going on with that right now as we speak?
Well, one of the things that he wants to do, he says, is to bring a new approach to dealing with the problem of urban violence. For example, he brought to this meeting today recovering addicts to talk about how addiction contributes to violence. And in that doing that, he's drawing on his own experience as a recovering alcoholic, also as a victim of himself of gun violence.
Imagine if these kids, these parents, had people to help them in times of trauma. Healthcare professionals, community members serving as volunteers, answering the call whenever a life and with it a family and a neighborhood is torn by violent crime. We have to make our community safer to secure a future of opportunity for our kids.
And Fred, he's already made good on that promise, or I guess he's making good this afternoon on that promise to convene that first meeting on urban violence, right?
That's right. It's going on as we speak, or just ended a few moments ago, Anthony. Yeah.
So, Fred, what sort of jumped out at you? What surprised you, I guess, about today's ceremony?
Well, for one thing, how specific he was on some points. For example, we heard about him talking about violence, right? And he was pretty specific in some of the approaches that he would bring to that. But here's another example. He's in talking about improving the schools, he's also talking about conducting an audit of the Boston school system. He says, we spend most of our money in Boston on the schools, like most towns in Massachusetts. And so it it's incumbent upon government to figure out that each one of those dollars spent is well-spent money.
Mm. He also talked about reforming the Boston Redevelopment Authority, and I was struck by the fact that he got perhaps his biggest ovation around this issue.
Yeah, that's right. You're in an inauguration celebration, right? You really wouldn't expect people at such a ceremony to applaud a line about the BRA, but he did get a big applause, and I think the fact that people did applaud speaks to the frustrations that of the people who were there in that room, which are a lot of the people from the neighborhoods around Boston, and they feel frustrated in dealing with the BRA on development projects a lot of the time.
Well, Fred, you mentioned the people in the room. We heard Marty Walsh talking about reaching out and representing everyone in Boston. Did that seem to be reflected in the audience today?
Yeah, more on the stage perhaps than in the audience. You know, I was there today with WBUR's David Scharfenberg, and he was the one who was pointing out to me that, in fact, the audience was largely white, which is a little strange for this guy who's really reached out to all of Boston. But I think it really just is a reflection of the fact that people who volunteered for and contributed to Walsh's campaign, who were most of the folks who were there at this inauguration, are white.
Well, new day in Boston, new mayor. That's WBUR's political reporter Fred Tice reporting on the inauguration of Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Fred, thanks so much.
Thanks, Anthony.
Stay with us when we return. More on today's inauguration of Marty Walsh and what the day's events suggest about the kind of mayor he'll be. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. And more now on today's inauguration of Boston's new mayor, Marty Walsh.
Walsh took the oath of office earlier today and referred to John Winthrop, who was the first to describe Boston as a city upon a hill.
We are a city upon a hill, but it's not just the shining light of Beacon Hill. It's Savin Hill where I live. It's Bunker Hill and Bellevue Hill and Fort Hill. It's Pope's Hill and Jones Hill and Telegraph Hill. It's Copse Hill, Mission Hill, and Eagle Hill.
Boston Mayor Martin Walsh, after he took the oath of office earlier today at Boston College.
We're going to spend a few minutes now talking about Walsh's inauguration and his vision and the changes he might bring to the city. With us is Susan Tracy, a former state representative and president of the Strategy Group. Susan, welcome.
Thanks, Sasha.
And Christopher Lydon, a veteran journalist and former candidate for mayor of Boston. He's also the host of Open Source, a new weekly program here on WBUR. Chris, thanks to you also for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
And Susan and Chris, question for both of you. I really thought that touch Marty Walsh gave, the city and the hill, sort of localizing it to Eagle Hill and so forth, it was a nice, lovely touch. And it made me wonder whether we can expect that under a Walsh administration, that maybe neighborhoods that aren't the current hotshots, like the Innovation District, and that maybe, you know, have been largely overlooked for a long time, will get even more attention from a Walsh administration than they did from a Menino administration. Do you think that's a signal of that, as much of a neighborhood guy as Menino was?
Yeah, I think different neighborhoods are going to get some spotlight under Marty Walsh. He's a Dorchester guy, you know, Pope's Hill, Ashmont Hill, all those places are in Dorchester, as far as I know. And I'm not saying that every hill that he mentioned is a Dorchester hill. So I think you are going to see some different neighborhoods rise to the top a little bit and feel proud about having Marty from there. And they're going to have a mayor who wakes up in their neighborhood every morning, who comes to work and grabs a cup of coffee at Patty's Pantry and wherever else they go. So.
And Chris, a different kind of equal opportunity here?
Eagle Hill is in East Boston, right?
It is in the north end of it.
And Notting Hill, he missed Notting Hill in Brighton. I thought it was the sort of rhetorically the best touch of his talk, but I'm not sure it means a whole lot. I think he's in love with the downtown development, too, maybe more. Uh-huh. But he is a Savin Hill guy through and through, with a lot of the, you know, positively neighborhood thinking, but negatively a certain provincialism, too. I mean, It was a good turn. I'm not sure what it means.
So that leads me to sort of a corollary question, which is that a few months ago, Walsh had made the technology community a little uneasy when he was at an Innovation District event, and he described himself as not a big high-tech person, and then someone in the crowd asked him to come up with the name of an entrepreneur he admired, and he couldn't. So I'm wondering whether you think it's possible that under our new mayor from Savin Hill, that some of these dynamic neighborhoods could lose momentum, or is that engine already in such full gear that little Walsh could slow that down?
No, I don't think Marty Walsh is going to let let people let neighborhoods lose momentum or let technology slow down or any of those things. But I do think the key next step for him is his team. He's got to put a really sharp, savvy team around him. You know, we've just seen two announcements, I guess a third today with Corporation Council, hardly a, you know, a place where a lot of innovation is happening. But
Eugene O'Flaherty got that job.
Yes, correct. So, you know, I think it's really about his team. And, you know, he's clearly going young with it. He's got a 29-year-old who he's choosing as his chief of staff. So I think Marty is going to, I think he understands.
Let me ask you both about his priorities as Boston's new mayor, the vision thing. You know, he talked about jobs, public safety, schools, trust and transparency in city government. And Chris, I'm thinking of you because a few weeks back, we talked to you about perhaps the missing big vision for the city during the mayoral campaign. And I'm wondering if those priorities sounded like that big vision.
I thought there were a lot of things missing, Anthony. I mean, it's a wonderful day, great day to be Irish, as somebody said, and to hear Yo-Yo Ma playing
Danny Boy.
And I think we all, not just today, and me included, want the best for Marty Walsh. And we know that it's a very, very promising time for this town. But half an hour later, as we used to say about Chinese food, I was hungry. Marty Walsh is a listener, and you can't underestimate him on that. But what did he say, really? What did anybody say? I didn't think anybody said much of anything until Ray Hammond said, you know, black church gestures and charisma. But reach out and grab somebody and say, neighbor, we're in this together. I thought it was... it was pretty flat. And the big thing I would say is the Red Sox have got the upper hand with the Yankees, but New York politics is on the zeitgeist and we're not. Hmm. New York politics has turned in a big way against luxury high rises forever, as far as the eye can see, especially sticking up out of terribly neglected neighborhoods. We're in that same inequality crisis that they are, but we haven't made the turn rhetorically or even conceptually. I was just struck that, I mean, Bill de Blasio, Cambridge-born, remember.
Red Sox fan. Let's
Says it, but he turned that campaign against Mayor Bloomberg. It was a huge turn against all the kinds of things that Tom Menino has done in Boston. We're ready to canonize Tom Menino, the greatest mayor, you know, on the planet forever, et cetera. I have high regard for Tom Menino. He did some very fine things, but where are the memorable buildings? There's a lot of sidewalks, but what about stuff over the sidewalk level? Where are the schools? I mean, it's sort of, well, he didn't do the school thing, but that is that thing. I've said before that if John Conley had got into the race alone against Tom Menino and Menino had run again, and not only his physical infirmity, but the whole record and a variety of disappointments had come to the surface, I think John Conley might well have won. That's not a fashionable opinion. Of course, I could be wrong. But I think the city of Boston has every reason to be going through the de Blasio populist neo a re-liberalizing city politics, to notice the truth of our cities, which is that they're suffering.
They're suffering in terms of that growing inequity between
each other. Yes, and this is not a secret and it's not an opinion. I mean, one thing the New York Times discovered it big time with that 5-day series on this, on the girl, 12-year-old girl, Dasani, you know, in Fort Greene, Brooklyn. I mean, a heroic survivor, but an utterly miserable context that she's growing up in. And this is happening here, too. We have the same gaps, and our media hasn't noticed it.
Well, but let me get Susan back into this conversation. Yeah, go
please,
ahead.
I want to hear Susan, but remind me when we come back to speak about Barry Bluestone.
Yes, please do. But Susan, you know, Chris is describing a sort of missing vision there that might have been presented today. Did you feel the same way?
Couple of thoughts. One, it's a 20-minute speech, you know, as you're coming in, and I think it's great to have these great and grand visions, and you know, I don't think Marty ran to be the best orator and best speech giver as mayor of Boston.
And I credit him as a listener. But I think that's the more important point.
What I found really interesting about his speech today was just his issues, I feel, and the way he talked about them were so personal. I felt like what you really, to me, learn about Marty Walsh in that speech is that he brings his personal experience with him to the mayor's office. And think about the things that he talked about. When he talked about education, he talked about the things that people talk about, extended day and early learning. But he also talked about technical careers. And that's spoken like a guy who's a union guy who grew up in the city, who understands that everyone's not going to college and what we need to do is have people have skills so they can get good jobs. When he talked about public safety, he put an unbelievable emphasis on guns. Well, keep in mind, Marty Walsh has been shot. When he was 22 years old, he was hit by a bullet. And I think he brings that very personal, I'm from this city, I grew up here, and I got shot, to his discussion about how we need to end violence. And when he talked about economic development, he talked about Main Streets, but he also talked about the Strand Theater, which is a place in his neighborhood. So I found it to be very personal. He talked about Alzheimer's, which was obviously very personal to him.
He mentioned his grandmother had had it.
Right. And the other thing that I think really bears mentioning is Marty Walsh, in his speech today, used the phrase one day at a time. And you cannot forget that Marty Walsh is a recovering alcoholic. And he is someone who cares deeply about dealing with substance abuse. And lots of families and lots of people have been helped by Marty, and I think he brings. So I know, Chris, you're looking for a big vision, but I do think Marty really does look at life in a little bit of a one day at a time sort of way, and I think that that's a perspective he brings.
I was looking for a commitment, Susan, to concrete things like a surtax on incomes over $500,000 a year, like a commitment to a commitment, not a blue sky interest in preschool.
And Chris, you wanted to hear that right out of the gate.
Well, yeah. I mean, what is he talking about? We didn't really talk about much of anything of substance in this mayor's race in Boston. I just want to say, though, that we did a pilot for our new show here in this studio with Barry Bluestone, Shirley Kressel, and John Conley, who lost. And we were basically getting the kinks out of our own operation. But we posted it on our website, radioopensource.org. And I hope sometime BUR might think of running it, because it was substantial. And the fundamentals were that Barry Bluestone at Northeastern, with the help from the Boston Foundation, has done the most complete survey we have about inequality. It's very, very serious. And those hills that Marty spoke about with great affection today are precisely those three-decker neighborhoods of the city of Boston where traditional working families are being forced out by this tremendous influx of graduate students who can band together and afford to pay rents that the working families cannot. The truth of the matter is that the average family in the city of Boston cannot afford an average home in the city of Boston. And that's a problem. And that's undermining and questioning, I think, the attachment to these sentimental views of the three-decker hills. They're fantastic. And they serve the working people of the city in the teens and 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. And I've had some small experience of them. And Marty's had a lot.
And these are all issues that he has said his administration will tackle. So in terms
this is where I wonder, what are you going to do, Marty? Where's the program?
In terms of what's to come, we did see yesterday a flurry of new appointments. Felix Arroyo, one of the lead minority candidates in the primary, will be the head of HHS,
too.
Absolutely. Michael Locanto will go to the school committee. He's a labor relations attorney. He also named his chief of staff. This is a 29-year-old, a native of Andover, Daniel Eric Coe. His dad is Harold Coe, former Massachusetts
Howard.
Public Health. Exactly, health commissioner. I'm interested in your take on this, because there's been all sorts of feedback. Is it bold? Is it risky? Is it visionary? Is this guy too neophyte? Is he veteran enough to navigate the politics of this job? What do you think of this 29-year-old who came from the Huffington Post being his chief of staff?
One, I don't know him. I think it's also hard to judge one appointment in a vacuum, because it's really about a team. It's not one person who's going to be the only other person at City Hall who's guiding the Marty Walsh administration. However, what I do think is what that appointment does say is, I'm looking for young people and I want to get them involved. I'm not afraid of smart people and having them part of my team. And I'm not afraid to just go outside the box and not simply reward people who are political people. So I think it sends some good messages for people who are looking to make sure that it's not going to just feel like an old stodgy City Hall.
You know, it raises this question in my mind. We've talked a lot over recent weeks about the legacy of 20 years of Tom Menino. He was known as someone who kept tight control over many of the details of running a city, from, you know, issuing building permits to filling potholes. Does Walsh represent a different kind of mayor, a different kind of governing style, either one of you?
Absolutely, he's going to be a different kind of governing style, and I think that's just a from the culture from that he you know, from which he comes. He is a legislator. I have worked in the legislature, and I have worked in City Hall. They are very different cultures. They really are. And when you are in the legislature, what you have to do is you have to work with people who have different opinions than you, and you have to find consensus. And I think Marty has indicated repeatedly that he is a consensus-driven guy. He's reached out immediately to the people who weren't supportive of him. The fact that three of his opponents quickly came on board and joined him, I think, was very interesting. It showed that he was someone that opponents were comfortable going to. So I do think his style is going to be much more consensus-driven. I think he will work more closely with the city council than mayors in the past.
Susan, I think you're being just
final word.
Wonderfully humane and kind. I
thank you.
more than I would be. I just want, and I think people hold these guys to a higher test. On Daniel Coe, I mean, he's hugely impressive. But let's be real. I mean, he is a classic, incredibly promising model of what we call the millennial kids, and they can do everything. They're sophisticated about digital technology, media, social media. I'm sure he's smart as a whip. And three cheers for having, but that's one guy in an important job. Where's the police commissioner? Where's the school superintendent? We have no clue about the people who are going to carry the real freight. And another point on which we're much too kind about the BRA. The Globe makes it clear that the BRA was Scandal City under Tom Menino. I mean, just rife with special deals, payoffs, and private, totally invisible shenanigans. Shirley Kressel went off on that at great length in our pilot. There's work to be done there, and much more than just saying the word transparency.
We'll have a lot more to talk about over the next 4 years.
We sure will.
Chris and Susan, thanks so much for coming in. Chris,
a real pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Chris Lydon is the host of WBUR's Open Source. He's also a former candidate for mayor. Chris, thank you. And Susan is president of the Strategy Group. She's also a former state representative. Susan, thanks.
Thanks, Sasha.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, a new way to compare Massachusetts hospitals when it comes to childbirth. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.